Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. I'm Boyd Hilton and I'm joined by two spectacular colleagues, Stephanie Seelan.
Hello.
And Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Steph is in an emotional state because she recently saw one of the things we're reviewing today, the latest from Disney Pixar, Coco. And we'll in full look at the emotional experience that was.
There are not enough tissues in the world to have mopped up her tears just now.
I've been deeply affected by
recently,
it.
Recently. Yeah. On top of that, we're going to review another film. This is a two-film podcast. I think the first time in the, some would say, glorious history of the Unmissables podcast that we reviewed two major motion pictures coming out in cinemas. It's the Oscar season, so it's partly why we're doing it.
Hold on.
Go on.
Oscar season.
Oscar season.
Ding!
And so the other film we're reviewing is The Post, which stars Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks and is directed by none other than Steven Spielberg.
Also very emotional.
Also very emotional. There's no greater Oscar bait, surely, than those three names. Streep, Hanks, Spielberg. Both of these films are out next Friday, Kay. And on top of that, we are reviewing, because we don't want to abandon TV wholesale, we are reviewing the latest series of Call the Midwife, the long-running, hugely popular historical
which is also very emotional.
Today is a very
emotional week.
It's an emotional roller coaster.
It's an emotional special.
Yeah, it's the emotional special.
I've just decided it's an emotional special.
Anyone with emotions, you're going to love it.
Yeah. And like, do you want to say, even because I got a tweet this week from, and of course, if I'd have been good, I would have noted who it was from. But I got a lovely tweet this week from someone who said, I've been looking for a TV review podcast for ages.
And they found one, didn't they?
And we're going elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they also said, there are other ones. And I was like, well, I mean.
That's out of order. Yeah. Name them.
Yeah. So, I mean, we mainly do TV, but we're not missing out any major TV this week. This is a week where there aren't that many. I think Call the Midwife is the only big new show that's starting this week, Steph. It's just the way it is. We're in the middle of, you know, January, and there's loads of new stuff started last week and the week before. Hmm. Yeah, it's just one week where there isn't that much new stuff. So that's partly why we're doing two films as well, just to reassure the people on the ground, podcast listeners, we are no way abandoning television.
No.
To prove that even more, before we get to that meat of those big three reviews, I'm going to ask everyone what they've been watching or listening to or reading this week, but probably mainly watching, I'm imagining, from Steph on Netflix.
Well, here is what I've been watching on Netflix this week. Okay.
And the slot really isn't officially called What's Steph Been Watching on Netflix, but having watched to do this for the last 40
years.
Podcasts...
Yeah, this is 41, so yeah.
Yeah,
40.
I think that's roughly what we're going to get.
Yeah, and that is what you're going to get. Okay, so I watched this over Christmas, and I did recommend it on the old Twitter. It's a Japanese thrill drama called Erased. Have you heard of this?
No.
I've heard of it, yeah.
It's absolutely fantastic. Right, now it sounds like a little bit strange, but it's not at all. So basically, it's based on... this manga cartoon guy, his name's Kai Sambei, right? And he basically did a mystery manga series, and it was called, right, I'm going to try and pronounce this, Boku Dake ga Ine Machi, which means The Town Without Me, okay?
Wow.
Right, so it's based on his, I know, based on his stories, and it's about a guy who's also a manga cartoonist guy, right? He finds his mum dead. Right. Mm. Major point is you have to read it because it's Japanese, okay? So it is a TV show you have to read. Also known as subtitles.
We're fine with that. You're the one who has the issue with subtitles.
I'm surprised you watched this.
I endured it. I relished watching this. It's amazing. Right, so Satoru finds his mum dead, okay? Now, stick with me. He also finds out he has time-travelling abilities. So he is able... Wait, don't...
Steph, this doesn't sound like you at all.
I know. But it's broken all barriers.
It's on Netflix. You'll watch anything on Netflix.
And he finds his mum that he goes back in time to find out if he can stop his mum being murdered. But also, when he was younger, three of his childhood friends were murdered, okay? And he also wants to go back and try and stop them being murdered and ultimately solve the crime of who is this person who's murdering all these people, right?
And did the same person murder the friends and the mum?
I absolutely cannot tell you that, okay?
Fine.
That would be ludicrous.
Fine. Just showing an interest.
Okay, so he's time travels, and at various different times he comes back and then he time travels again. Please give it a go. It's fantastic.
So he's Doctor Who.
It's kind of a bit supernatural murder mystery thriller.
How many episodes is it?
I think it's 10 episodes, I think.
Okay. I'm down with it. Yeah.
With my
I've seen it when I sweep past all the Netflix stuff. I've seen it there.
Oh
yeah.
Boy,
with my new Netflix subscription, I might. This might be something I watch.
Are you still subscribing?
Fantastic.
You haven't subscribed yet. You haven't dropped it.
I haven't dropped it yet.
The other thing I watched, also on Netflix, is One of Us. Have you seen that? It's a documentary by Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady, who also made Jesus Camp. They were Oscar nominated in 2006 or something like that. Anyway, it's about the Hasidic Jewish community.
I want to see that.
I want to see that.
Mm. Like a Jew doc.
Hour long. Mm. Oh, it's a fantastic.
I say that as a Jew, by the
fantastic
way.
Fantastic Jew doc. Yeah, don't write in and complain. You as a resident Jew. It's about three Jewish people attempting to kind of actually leave their ultra kind of Orthodox community. And it is fascinating. It's all about the kind of inner workings.
Wait, when you say that, I mean, they're not going to be stopped, are they? It's not like Scientology, or is
it? Right, now. So, obviously, the Hasidic Jewish community is an incredibly kind of closed, knit, very closed community in lots of ways. And they have their own laws, and they have their own kind of court system. And so one of the people we're trying to leave is a woman. She's in a marriage she doesn't want to be in anymore, but she's got loads of children, and it's all about the difficulties she has. One is a young guy who's just started questioning it, and the other is a guy who did already leave and has moved away. So it's absolutely fascinating, and it doesn't, you might think, oh, well, this is all going to be like make Judaism, this kind of area of Judaism, seem like it's like Scientology, but actually you find that, like, the young guy kind of has a bit, he's like, oh, I couldn't go back to it now. And then he's like, but actually, there are all these wonderful things about this community. So it's really well-rounded. There's lots of kind of shocking things in it, but it's
What's this called? I'm going to write it down.
It's called One of Us.
One of Us.
Yeah.
Right. I can confirm that Kay is writing it down.
Yeah, she is writing it down.
One of Us.
Both on Netflix.
Well, no one's surprised.
No one's surprised.
But I am...
No.
She's written there with an appended note. Yeah. Not to be read out loud. Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah. I mean, but further proof that you will literally watch anything on Netflix, though.
That sounds fascinating.
If we got, it does sound fascinating. Yeah. Well, what I mean is neither of those things are the normal kind of thing that you'd think.
Well, the first one surprised me particularly because it's got subtitles.
Yeah.
And it sounds a bit, not dystopian, but it's like, science fiction.
Can I say, guys, I'm growing. What can I say? Yeah.
Now, we both know that's not true.
Yeah. If there's dystopian science fiction starring that guy from Hollyoaks.
God,
with subtitles.
Wow.
Ricky Whittle.
That is, if I'm very bad, I'm going to end up in a hell that is just a constant rerun of.
But you would watch it if it was on Netflix. That's what I'm saying.
I think you would.
Just different standards for Netflix and everything else.
Be honest, would
I
you?
I sort of do have a different standard for Netflix. Yeah. It's the Netflix sheen. It just draws
it's interesting.
Me in.
It's so interesting. Hmm. Yeah. Anyway, Kay, have you been watching Netflix or have you got other TV services?
I've got other devices. I've got other methods of entertainment. I want to tell you about a book.
Oh.
So, The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock, written by Hermes Gower. And she's written this book, which everyone's been like talking about on, you know.
I haven't.
Okay, fine. You are everyone. Okay. Other people who like books. That
people have been talking about.
Right, people in the know.
I'm being silly.
Yeah, I know. People in the know have been saying that this is one of the books to look out for in 2018. I think there was a bit of a bidding war over the manuscript and stuff, which obviously generates a lot of excitement. Set in 18th century London, two main protagonists are Mr. Hancock. He's a widowed merchant who...
You love something with a
you
merchant.
You love a merchant, yeah.
He loves a merchant.
This is the miniaturist all over again.
He really is. Yeah. His merchants are your... Oh, I don't know what he is.
I haven't read The Merchant of Venice, so...
No.
Maybe that's next on my reading.
Yeah, okay, merchant.
Anyway, he comes across in his possession of a mermaid.
Ooh.
Right, bear with. Now, the other character...
We are really
in his possession,
bear with.
An actual mermaid?
Yeah. It's a dead mermaid, to be fair. And it's not like...
dead mermaid?
Yeah, but it's not like Ariel, like the little mermaid. This is like...
Sirens. It's the original, mermaid.
Yeah, it's like a small little goblin-y type of, like, it's not attractive. But anyway, it comes in the possession of it. And the other character who's really significant in the story is a woman of the night. We call her, like, a courtesan named Angelica Neal. Mm. These two stories are in tandem. And basically, it's how this mermaid brings them together.
The dead mermaid.
The dead mermaid.
Right, okay.
How it has this allure over the whole of society and how it brings these two characters together, how their paths cross and the effect the mermaid has on their lives. And it's all just like, I don't know.
It's a fantastical period merchant drama.
Well, doesn't he just bury the mermaid when he finds her dead?
No, because it's an object of like, it's a curiosity that then people come and see. And it's like,
he keeps the dead mermaid. What does he keep it in, like a case?
Yeah, and then like a little glass case for people to come and see. And it's you know, it's quite a fascinating sight. Yeah. Like, people come all over to see it. And, it brings these two characters together. And it's the effect the mermaid has on
it. Sounds a bit like, thematically, The Weight of Water. There's another Oscar.
Yeah, The Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water, you're right. Yes. The Weight of Water is another.
Is it a book or a film?
The Shape of Water, let's get it right. Which is in which Sally Hawkins falls for a sea creature.
Yeah.
And there's lots of, it's kind of similarly fantastic.
The mystical effect. Yeah,
yeah, very mystical effect.
But in this one, he's pickled a mermaid and it brings
people together.
He hasn't
pickled.
I'm not saying it's the same. I'm saying it's just similar. Okay. I'm just saying thematically
also,
similar.
No pickling. Don't worry about that.
But how is she staying?
I don't want to get spoiled.
Maybe that's a key part of the...
No, it's actually not, but I just can't get into it.
She doesn't want to entertain me saying the mermaid's pickled.
She didn't realise.
I haven't really read the book. No, I have. Anyway, so it's really...
How is this mermaid...
It's really well written, and it's...
Please remind us of the title and the author again.
It's called The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock. It's written by Imogen Hermes Gower. It's coming out on the 25th of January.
Oh, it's not even out yet.
No, and one thing I'd say about it, it's in hardback. It's 496 pages, so it is a little heavy.
I thought you were going to say it's £496. It's like, it is. That is a little steep.
The actual cost of a mermaid.
Hardbacks are very expensive.
No, but it's really heavy. So sounds good. You have to commit to it. And
okay.
Yeah.
We do not endorse the selling of mermaids or the buying of mermaids, we just want to say.
Okay. Keeping them in
or
aspic.
Pickling them.
Amazing. So that's the first thing I want to tell you about. Also, Derry Girls. Now, have you been keeping up with
it?
Yes. Do you know what? I thought last night, I need to watch it because we loved it so much.
It's so good. Oh my God, Steph, it gets even funnier.
I'm going to do a binge, I think.
Do it. I've watched, I think, 5 episodes. Episode 3's this week.
Yeah.
Look out for episode 4 because I think personally it's the best one. And basically, the children of Chernobyl come to Derry where they're welcomed, as Sister as Sister Michael puts it, to give their wee lungs a clear out. Oh. And it's so funny, right? And there's this scene where Erin and Claire and co start dancing at a house party to Wigfield's Saturday Night, and it is honestly hilarious. Right. So check that out. That's really good.
I agree. I'm in full agreement on Derry Girls. Yeah, we were first. I think we invented it because everyone else jumped on the bandwagon.
No, wait a minute.
No,
Derry, you boys.
Come on.
Me and Steph said it was the comedy of 2018.
We loved it.
I'm saying we as a podcast.
All right, we okay.
And now the good news is, Steph, it's been commissioned for a second series.
Has it? Oh, fantastic. Oh, well done, all you girls.
That's a very loud shout.
Oh, I was pleased for them, and this is brand new information.
Now you've perforated their eardrums, they can no longer film.
Oh, I'm so glad for them.
Yeah, so series 2, that's exciting news. Oh, just to say, Derry Girls is on Thursdays at Channel 4 at 10 p.m. I like to be service driven.
They're on at 10 p.m. because they say the F word loads, as we discovered.
Yeah,
didn't
right,
we?
They
yeah.
say
yeah.
the MF word. Remember, ooh, famously yeah, in the first it. Episode. Also, the last thing I want to tell you about is a podcast. Last week, a Gogglebox dream came true, and I interviewed the Siddiquis. Now, as you both know, they are my favourite family on Gogglebox.
You do love the Siddiquis.
I love them.
Love the Siddiquis.
And we did the heat interview with them, and they were. So fun. That was in last week's issue. But in the course of conversation, they were telling me that they have a podcast themselves called The Siddiquis Ramblings. And I've listened to about 3 episodes now, and I'm just going to binge it because they started doing this in January 2017. So that's the good news, that you've got just so much to get through. And I'll just say that if any of you listening and any of you guys love Gogglebox and love the Siddiquis, then you've got to check it out because they're so witty and warm. And as it's suggests, it's just them rambling on about different subjects. It's really funny. Sometimes they talk about the news, sometimes it's just like the first episode, in fact, and the reason why this podcast came about is because Sid had the flu and got a bit delirious and had this really crazy dream where he was in B&Q doing his grocery shopping. He was only wearing pants, so like briefs and some sandals. Did his B&Q shopping. The person at the door, security, said, look, you can't come in here like that, you've got to put on a tabard, wear a fluorescent tabard.
Well,
so he did. Wore the tabard, came out, dropped his trolley off by a dumpster, like to go and return the tabard.
Is there anything more weird than people explaining dreams?
No.
There isn't.
Honestly, I love this dream so much.
Right, go on.
He very
such annoying.
No.
Carry on, sorry.
He's dropped the tabard. Go on.
He's dropped the tabard off at the security guard, got back to his shopping. The shopping's all been put in the dumpster and it's got squashed banana all over it. What the hell?
How did that end up in a podcast?
That was generated. That's where the beautiful idea of the podcast came, because they were like, this is so random and crazy and funny. We should just record this. And they did. And then, like, onwards bound, it's now just funny anecdotes, them talking about, like, everything.
In case you're worried, we're going to do a spin-off of this podcast where we discuss our wacky dreams. We're not.
We're not.
No.
But can
not.
I mention to be fair, podcast?
This podcast is us just rambling about entertainment, so it's very similar.
I draw the line at dreams.
Can I mention a podcast?
Of course you can.
So obviously I've jumped on the old Oprah bandwagon. Because I love Oprah anyway, but since obviously that amazing Golden Globes speech that she did, and I was like, I need a bit more Oprah in my life. And she's got a podcast, which is called Oprah Super Soul Conversations. And it's all about, she gets on like all doctors and experts, and she starts it going, I believe the greatest gift that you can give yourself is time. And then it's just all about how to enrich your life. And so if you feel like you want to do a bit like self...
Oh, it's not self-help, is it?
And God, what is your problem?
Boyd.
Tell me she hasn't got Dr. Phil on it.
Boyd.
Look, she hasn't got Dr. Phil.
You're attacking Sid's dream, and now you're attacking Oprah.
The people who, like, that woman who did the book, The Happiness Project and stuff like that, it's all like 11 ways to make your life better, and it's just, it's not cheesy. It's not all really cheesy and rubbish.
Okay. Oh, don't talk to him. He's being cynical.
You love
don't
that.
Talk to me. I mean, that's going to be hard if we're going to do a podcast together.
Boyd, did you or did you not find that speech rousing and
I believe
uplifting?
If you're listening to me in the last week's podcast,
yes.
I very much said that.
So you might like to listen to my Oprah.
There's a very good article online somewhere that I saw earlier in the week about the whole Oprah for President situation, which pointed out that she is a fan of complete and utterly ludicrous charlatans in the world of, like, self-improvement and other things.
Well,
and heavily promoted Dr. Phil, who, you know, I'm not saying he's a charlatan for legal reasons, but there are definitely issues with her, those kinds of people she promotes.
I think she just likes to endorse people who she thinks can help her wider Oprah community.
Yeah. She hasn't got a great track record on.
I will not have any Oprah bashing.
Listen.
Okay?
So basically, we're saying listen to this podcast. What was it, Steph? What did it call it?
It's called Super Soul Conversations. Thank you very much.
And definitely listen to the Siddiqui's ramblings, because it's warm and witty and very funny.
Listen and decide for yourselves, of course. Yeah. That's, you know, just offering a note of.
Just
of
saying, if you need a
caution.
Little uplift, if you feel like, oh, how can I. Which there are 11 ways to make myself feel a bit happier.
Yeah, and do you know what?
Oprah can tell you.
The Siddiqui's one would definitely uplift you. It's so funny. I was like grinning like a Cheshire cat on the tube.
What have you got for people that's going to uplift them and make their lives better, Boyd?
Yeah, impress
I have
us.
Got the most darkest episode of Inside Number 9 yet.
Oh, I liked Inside Number 9.
So next
K
week,
too,
next week's Inside Number 9, which is called To Have and To Hold, I tweeted about it. I said, oh, you know, it's an incredible episode, keeping up. This is best series yet. That's episode 4, which is on next Tuesday. And it's about this married couple who've been married for years, and Stephen Pemberton, Nicola Walker from Good Programs. And you're not quite sure, like for the first half of the episode, it really seems to just be about this kind of moribund relationship between the two of them. And then you think, oh, maybe he's been having an affair. They get mysterious phone calls. Then you think maybe she's been having an affair. You're not quite sure what's going on or why it's spending so much time. And he's a wedding photographer himself. Mm. And then I don't want to give it any away. It takes a turn.
Oh.
It just takes a turn.
Right.
And all I'll say is the producer, Adam Tandy of Inside, saw me tweeting about it. And he tweeted me back and he said, yes, for this one, the gloves are off. I thought that was such
When's
a brilliant way of putting
on?
It.
When's that
so next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, right.
Next Tuesday. So not tonight's one, if you're listening to this on the 16th of January. So next week. Next week's one, 23rd of January. It's incredible. And then I watched the following one after that, which is 2 weeks away. That one blew my mind. So the fifth episode, which is called And the Winner Is about a jury meeting for a BAFTA-style TV award.
Oh, God. How accurate is it?
Which would be amazing, because I've obviously, I mean, Kay and I've both been on awards. Mm. Kay's watched me chair some those style meetings where you have to decide who's going to win an award. She's seen me do that in action. But more than that, I've been on a BAFTA jury with Reese Shearsmith,
who co-wrote
this
episode.
You're basically inspiration for this
and
episode.
In the episode, there's a TV critic character who is more
you?
Than a little annoying.
Has he got glasses?
Now, she's a woman,
oh, okay,
played
fine.
By the great Fenella Wolgar. But, I mean... I'm not saying it's based on me because that would be ludicrously egomaniacal. But there's definitely, it's definitely like this oh, character, right?
No.
She's a kind of really self-important TV critic who says stuff. Repeatedly says in it. This is where she repeats this in it. No spoilers. She does say in it. Oh yeah, I've interviewed them. It's just the kind of thing.
Oh my god, this is you.
Yeah. Tick, tick, tick.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a female version of me, but I'm not saying it is. That would be egomaniacal.
I think it is.
We're saying it. What is so funny about watching is it, all the things that happen in these meetings are
there.
It's
all true.
It's so. I found that whole experience of watching it borderline terrifying, but incredible.
Sounds like W1A.
At the same time, because there's this critic woman, there's an old actor who's really pompous and thinks that everyone mumbles their lines these days, which again, I've had in these meetings. There's an American, like, glamorous actress played by Zoe Wanamaker who hasn't watched any of the things, which is so true.
Oh my God, that's so true.
And then the chair of the meeting gets really annoyed with her. She hasn't watched any of them. It's so funny. And there's that member of the public. That's the masterstroke. So the whole idea is that they've brought in a member of the public to serve in each jury to get what the public thinks. And everyone's like completely treats her like shit. It's so funny.
Which episode is this?
It's the fifth episode. It's called
Episode 5. I'm going to tune in for that.
So that's on. So the next two, that's the next episode, which is next week. There's one tonight. There's one if you're listening on Tuesday when the pod comes out. Who doesn't? I mean, who doesn't immediately listen?
Who doesn't immediately?
But the episode 5 is the one on the following weekend. Yeah, it's extraordinary. Wow. So there you go. Two great episodes of Insomnia Number 9, and it is the greatest series so far. And the other thing I was going to mention is, on top of the two films we're doing this week, both out on Friday, there's another film opening that day, which I saw last night, The Commuter, starring Liam Neeson, which I loved. It's a hilarious. It's the latest Liam Neeson action thriller.
Can I just say, is it... Right. Is it a serious thing? Because I watched the trailer for this and I was like, can he only do this? Can he only do like three lines now, which are the lines from Taken?
Yeah.
Is it a piss take or is it actually a serious thing?
No, it's a serious. Well, it's not a comedy. It's not a piss take, but it is the latest in a long line of brilliantly ludicrous.
Oh, so it is what I feared. Okay.
Hugely entertaining. Liam
Neeson
action
thrillers. Let's go see it, Steph.
This is the one from the guy who directed him in Unknown. And have you seen Nonstop, the airplane one?
No, but I really did love Unknown, I have to say.
Yeah, Unknown was brilliant. Nonstop was even better. Nonstop is a whodunit set in an airplane where he's tasked with this thing. And this is Nonstop on a train. He's on a train and he's tasked with a thing, a ludicrous thing.
Oh, God.
The task in this film is so preposterous and it makes so little sense. As you're watching it, you're like, this doesn't make any sense. Why would they get him to do this thing? And it's completely ridiculous, but you go along with it.
But it's really entertaining. It's going to be a blockbuster.
It's fantastic, yeah. So that is The Commuter, it's called.
Okay.
Opens next Friday, the same day as the films we're going to review in a minute. Wow. There you go.
You'll have to decide which one you're going to watch.
You'll have to decide. It's a great week for films. Maybe it is or maybe it isn't. Maybe we'll all hate Coco.
Who knows?
We'll come to that later. Go on, Kay. Have you got something else?
No, I was going to say, is this the juncture where we just let everyone know about how to get in touch?
Because it's your juncture.
Have we had
it's
any
Kay's
more
juncture.
No. Oh, yes. Well, we have. We've got 61 reviews, but it's done that thing where you can't read the review yet. So I'm going to hold fire. I'll tell you about the next pod. You know on iTunes where
the number will go up, but you can't.
That's weird. You can't read the review. So
why does that happen?
Does it do that?
I don't know.
Because it's got explicit language.
Maybe it's
in
so
it.
Awful it won't let us read it. No.
Boyd, what? I mean,
I think there is going to be a review.
I don't know about it.
I think there might be a delay.
I bet you anything. There will be a review. Next podcast, I'll read it out. But we've got 61. There's still time to vote, people. And when I say vote, I mean rate.
Yeah.
So you can go on iTunes.
Rate and review.
Look us up.
Sign up.
Review us. Subscribe. Do everything. Get in touch.
Listen. Download.
Become a blog.
I'm just listing
people on the ground.
At Boyd Hilton, at Steph Sealand, at Kay Ribera. And I just have to say, someone did tweet me last week, but because they tweeted my handle and then started the sentence straight away, it didn't come through to me. And Steph had to flag it up. It was at Noje36. And
it's our American
Noj.
Friend.
Noj. Yeah. They are from California. They're listening to us, which is good.
Wow.
And special note to us to say that actually if you top up the amount of reviews on the US plus the UK iTunes, we've probably got 60.
So did you look on US iTunes?
I haven't looked.
Do that?
Oh yeah, you did. I have got a US iTunes account. Yeah, I've yet to check that. I will. I'll check it out.
Check that while we're talking.
While we're talking, that'd be great.
Okay, I might do that while you're describing.
While you're talking, I might tell... While you're looking that up, I might tell you also that last week I interviewed Tom Jones.
You interviewed Tom
Jones.
The
legend.
Such a show-off, such a name-dropper.
Don't
never do
try
that.
And divert never, attention from yourself, yes.
He was lovely.
Was he?
Yeah, I was a bit worried that, you know, because sometimes people don't live up to your expectations. Yeah. He's a bit of a ledge. And he was so, so nice. And he recorded very sweetly.
Is this for The Voice?
Yeah, for The Voice, UK.
When is The Voice coming back?
It's on TV now.
Is it on now?
Yeah, oh. It's already started. Uh-oh. Steph's tuning in.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and he recorded very sweetly a message from my 8-year-old niece, who from the age of 6 has been his biggest fan. And if you say to her, Tilly, who's your favourite pop star? She says Tom Jones, a little
Tilly
worryingly.
Says her favourite pop star is Tom Jones.
Yes.
Weird, isn't it?
She absolutely really loves him. And she'll sing Just Help Yourself. Help yourself, you know
just
that thing?
Help yourself.
On long car journeys, that's all she wants to listen
Boy,
to.
Boy, are you laughing at my amazing singing? I could be on The Voice.
You should be on The Voice. You're better than most of the people on it.
We'd swivel for you.
Thanks, babes. I also, when I was younger, I loved Cliff Richard, so I can kind of understand Ooh. That.
Oh.
What?
Summer Holiday.
Similarly
weird.
That was like the first, that was the first cassette I ever had in my life.
Oh my God,
Mistletoe
I love
Wine.
That you haven't chosen songs from Summer Holiday, which is quite upbeat. You've gone for the real, like, Mistletoe
Christmas
Wine
time,
Christmas.
Mistletoe and Wine, yeah.
Wow. Tune.
Same.
Revelations tumbling out. Thank you very much. So we're moving on now to the meat. Post,
you're allowed
post
to
Tom,
now that I've
post
given
Tom Jones name drop.
Public yeah. announcements, yeah.
Excellent. Shall we start with Call the Midwife? I've decided to call it.
Call the Midwife.
Call the Midwife.
Yes.
Series 7. Can you believe?
I actually can't.
No, I know. It's extraordinary. 7 series of the show that was adapted from a series of books by Jennifer Wirth. Diaries, no less. She was an actual midwife in the 50s.
Have you read any of those?
No.
I have.
Have you?
What? I know, shocking, but actually, I have because my mum made me read them because she read them and she said, you have to read these are amazing.
Well, before, wait a minute, did you read them before this?
Before Call the Midwife came on. Before Call the Midwife.
I'm so glad we're doing it. You're the expert.
Are they good?
Well, they're, I have to say, they're really good. And Call the Midwife, I love and I think it's amazing. They're more emotional. They're more emotional because obviously it's all true, like you say, it's diaries, so it's all true stories. They're very, very heart wrenching, and it's like,
oh God.
I mean, it doesn't always turn out well in these Call the Midwife, but it really didn't turn out well very much.
Eek. Okay,
yeah.
So set in Poplar in the East End of London in the 50s, starts out in the 50s, but now we've reached 1963 in the series. Do the diaries go that far, or
no?
It's a test for you.
I don't think so.
And.
Oh, go on.
Okay.
Sorry, I just found the paper.
And in each episode begins, as any... Maybe if you haven't seen... If you've never seen Call the Midwife, maybe you consider it to be... You thought, oh, it's that kind of period drama, you know, about women giving birth and
That's
women
me.
Helping
I'm
them.
A virgin.
Did you think it was... Do you think it looked a bit... Do you think it was a bit boring?
Oh, you never watched it
I'm going to be honest. Okay. This is not my review of it. This is my preconception.
I'm saying.
Preconception. Was just like, oh, this is going to be a little bit dreary Sunday night.
I think that is the perception that some people have. But at the same time, it's a huge... It was the biggest show on Christmas Day.
I was
going
to say, I watched it. That was
the
big thing.
For the last 2 years, it's been the biggest show on Christmas.
Yeah.
Bigger even than Mrs. Brown's Boys and Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Every episode, if you haven't seen it, begins with Vanessa Redgrave narrating the beginning from the diaries. And it's always taken from the diaries. And the whole thing's adapted by Heidi Thomas, the great scriptwriter who wrote your favourite...
Little Women.
Little Ladies.
Little Women. This is so up your... This is really very you, so I'm surprised you haven't watched it before.
So that's my kind of explanation of what the hell Call the Midwife is, in case you've never bothered to watch it. But and do you want to describe where we're up to story-wise as we reach the 7th year
of this programme? Okay, so I'm just going to read this from the press release, because the big...
Honest.
Why not?
I mean, you couldn't have pretended that you brilliantly remembered every detail.
And it's interesting because actually this is factual because this year, like, it is, even though these stories aren't factual and they aren't based on the stories, the ones now, I don't think, but it was a big freeze. You know, they are factually correct around the time. Yeah. So in 1962.
I like a historically accurate drama.
Yeah, but
weather,
there was
weather.
This.
Historically accurate weather.
But there was this huge big freeze in 1962. Yeah, so it is historically accurate in that way. Everything else is kept very historically accurate. Anyway, sorry, okay, go on.
So, as Steph said, the big freeze continues, and the departure of Barbara prompts Sister Julienne, played by Jenny... How do you say that?
Jenny Agata.
Agata.
Yeah. Railway Children.
To recruit a new midwife called Lucille, played by Leonie Elliott. And there's no rest for poor Lucille. As soon as she gets there, she's called out to the sickbed to assist Trixie, Helen, played by Helen George, with a breached birth. And then also Trixie has to deal with another pregnancy with basically this character called Nadine, who is a single mother. She's an exotic dancer. She's not necessarily into being a mother, is going to have the child adopted. And the birth is difficult, to say the least. So Trixie is obviously concerned about her. But she's also dealing with stuff in her personal life, which I quite liked. You get to see the personal life. She's deciding to possibly take her relationship with Christopher to the next level.
I can't believe you've left out the most important subplot. when the Jewish couple, the lovely, legendary, elderly Jewish woman,
I found it too sad. I don't want to talk about it.
Sorry, but, you know, Ruth, played by Julie Legrand, and her husband Arnold, played by the legendary Alan Cordner, who's a legendary actor, character actor, who's done many great things. And they're helped by Nurse Crane, my favourite character.
Oh, she's
Linda, she's the best. By Belinda Bassett, and at the same time, there's this policeman who wants to kind of move them on.
They want to. They need to demolish the building.
Yes.
Mm. So they need to be evicted. They're the last people in there.
Yeah.
It's, they've spent all their life savings to buy where they live, but they're going to demolish in a couple of days. But obviously, this woman is dying.
Exactly.
So they don't want to.
So sad.
And there's a whole. It's very sad. And there's a whole East End Jewish thing going on there at the same time. Which is my roots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I come from. Born and bred, East End Jewish community.
Tribute to Jewish people.
Is this from your diaries?
Yeah,
actually?
I wrote this episode. I secretly wrote this episode. And it's interesting. Now, I'm going to say right now, I'm going to put my cards on the table, with midwife-wise.
Yeah.
I don't. What I tend to do with Call the Midwife, since probably for the last 7 years, series, I've always watched the first episode, and I think, oh, this is really good, Call the Midwife, because you think it's going to be a cosy period drama on Sunday night on BBC One, which it is on Sunday night on BBC One.
And it is cosy. It is.
Well,
I think it is.
I think it's not. This is my whole key point.
Someone dies every week.
Yeah. It's not. It's uncosy.
But it's
actually. It's actually a socially searing, I'm using the word, drama about social issues at the time.
Yeah.
It looks at racism, anti-Semitism,
sexism,
obviously, pretty much every week. And it doesn't flinch from showing tragedy and death and the difficulty women have generally just giving birth at that time. And there's the whole thing about the woman. And in this episode, there's the Jewish couple, the elderly Jewish woman, who's dying. There's the woman, there's, as you mentioned, the girl in Soho, who's basically a stripper.
Yeah.
You know,
pregnant
and that
stripper.
Kind of talks all about that and that life. It's gritty.
And also it's non-judgmental. I like that about that storyline.
Single episode of Call the Midwife is like a lesson in tolerance and acceptance.
Right.
Yeah.
Every single one.
I might have to start watching this.
Yeah, but in a very gritty way. So it's really, it's kind of, and there's, all right, I know what you're going to say.
Do you know what I mean about it?
There are nice moments. There are lovely moments.
In a good way.
There's a reason people gather at Christmas to watch it is because everybody really enjoys it. There is a cosy feel because there is, crucially, camaraderie between these women.
Of course,
But
the brilliant thing, the genius of Heidi Thomas, the writer, is she's disguised this searing social document as a cosy Sunday night thing. And it's brilliant. It's like a social distract.
It's a sugar-coated pill.
It's a sugar, exactly. And there are these lovely moments. But actually, the thing that really, I think that does brilliantly, is show you what life was like and the whole kind of socialist undercurrent, the whole thing. Okay.
No, I just agree. No, I actually see your point. I agree. But I will start watching it because it has, I think sometimes saying something's a Sunday night cosy drama is perceived as a derogative.
Yeah.
A derogatory thing, but actually, I don't think like with this. I would happily sit and watch this, and now I want to. Is it worth going back, or should I just start from the series? Because I felt
There's some good romances if you don't start from the series.
Part of my enjoyment was marred from not knowing the backstories of the characters. I think.
And like, Trixie's got a really interesting story. Who's played by Helen George? I think if you don't watch Call the Midwife, you don't understand the magic of Helen George, and she's brilliant in this.
Is she related to Leanne B. George?
No, she isn't. I would love to be related to her. That would be amazing. But there's lessons in kind of how you view people and how people behave, because she's always treated in a certain way, and actually completely goes against what she's really, really like. But I know I said this before, but what I really love about it is the camaraderie of these midwives and how they all look out for each other and they really love each other, and how the lesson really is that love will always see you through at the end of it, which is where I think you're getting that whole cozy feel. But as you say, really cleverly disguised, lots of very deep social issues, and also historically accurate, as I said before.
It's particularly the weather.
But that is important.
No, I'm not denying the importance of accurate weather.
I tell you what.
AccuWeather.
I tell you why that's important, because when I watched it at Christmas, my mum was going, do you know what? God, that freeze was terrible. It really was awful, yeah. And do you know we should watch the Christmas special, Rip? Because the Christmas special is really good.
So if you were a regular and you've watched all of it, have you? Have you watched all seven series? And like,
I haven't watched every single episode. Watched every single episode, but I've watched mostly all of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Who knew?
This one's
not even on Netflix, is it? Maybe
no,
it is.
No, but I love it because I watch it with my mum.
Oh, nice.
This one, period drama in 2017 at the NTAs.
Yeah, it's massively...
Well, people love Call the Midwife. I didn't know either of you watch it.
Pretty much the biggest, the most watched dramas of the last few years, off the top of my head, are Sherlock, Downton Abbey and Call the Midwife. They were the the three gargantuan giants of ratings.
I think a lot
and
of the
now
reason
only Midwife's left, really,
I think a lot of the reason it's done so well is I think a lot of people read the books before as well. I really
do.
Because the books are beloved. Yeah.
Beloved.
You should read the books.
Beloved.
You should read them. They're really good. Beloved.
Do you think it got some of the Downton audience when it stopped? Or not?
No, because I think it's complete. I don't think you can compare it. No.
Well, it was always on 8 o'clock, and then it's still on 8 o'clock. It's on BBC One, we should say. It's starting Sunday the 21st, next Sunday 8 o'clock. And then it used to be that it was on 8 o'clock and then down to be on 9 o'clock.
Well, do you remember Miranda Hart?
Yeah, Miranda was in it.
So that was a huge
Tom
Ferris, apparently.
Yeah, it's been great cast down the years. Yeah. Agatha's one of the few that's still...
Agatha,
and Helen George. I guess Helen George. Helen George has been
in
it from the beginning?
Helen George has been it from the beginning. Trixie.
Yeah.
Also on Strictly.
Of course. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
I'm going to give it 4 stars too.
I too am giving it 4 stars.
Wow.
Wow, there you go.
We are united in our recommendation of Call the Midwife, BBC One, Sunday, 21st of January, 8 p.m. Moving on to the first of our films that are awards worthy, shall we say, or that it's no coincidence, to say the least, that this film is coming out in the awards season. It came out, I think, Christmas Day, maybe?
Meryl wouldn't allow it to come out at any
time. Street wouldn't allow it.
No. Spielberg wouldn't allow it.
Spielberg wouldn't allow it. This is The Post, which opens on Friday, as it stars Streep Hanks, and it's directed by Steven Spielberg, and it's about it's kind of the story of Washington Post publisher Kay Graham, real-life figure, played
great
by
name.
Streep. Great name, Kay. Kay Ribeiro Graham. And... Her uncompromising editor, played by Ben Bradley, played by Tom Hanks, he wants to publish secrets about the US government which involve Vietnam, and they're unearthed by the New York Times. So the New York Times ended up not being able to publish them for various reasons. So it comes to the Washington Post. The Washington Post has to decide, are we going to reveal in a kind of unprecedented way, pre-Watergate, this is, Nixon's the president, what they've been doing in the Vietnam War, basically lying about the Vietnam War and how well it's going, or do they kind of do what normally papers would do, which is kind of gloss over and not really deal with the issue. So it's a big kind of should they, shouldn't they.
It's a huge turning point, isn't
it? Huge turning point, yeah, in political / media / newspaper history. And the kind of other thing, that reason why there's a big issue about it is because the company, the Washington Post company, is floating on the stock market, and they want to kind of, they're trying to keep everything safe and careful because they don't want to lose all that money.
Trying to keep everyone sweet.
They want to keep their investors sweet.
All the corporate people
sweet.
Yeah,
and Meryl Streep's character is kind of, she's inherited the company, isn't she, from her husband?
It was her father's company. It was her father's company, and her father bestowed it to her husband.
Correct.
But it's always been in her family.
Yeah. So that's the kind of jeopardy of the situation.
Yeah.
It's how to describe it? I guess it's about newspapers, it's about journalism, it's kind of in that mould.
It's about sources.
All the President's Men, sources.
It's about freedom of the press.
Freedom of the press, exactly.
Yeah, it's very much about the old workings of newspapers and how, you know, it was very much in, and probably still is, to be honest, a boys' club.
Yeah, a women in a man's world.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. There's a big feminist kind of undercurrent.
It's
well.
About legacy.
Yeah.
Because
she gets Meryl Streep's character gets treated openly with open disdain by all the men.
Misogyny.
The board is like 16 men and her, and she has to try and deal with their kind of open...
But she's to distill it down, it's basically, are you going to publish this or are you not?
That's the key.
Yeah.
Right. That's the key. And it kind of all builds up, doesn't it? So the finale is taking that decision.
Yeah.
And obviously, historically, there'd be no point in it. So, spoiler alert, if they didn't publish it, that would be a big disappointment at the end of this film.
I don't think it's a spoiler tip for us to say that did happen.
So, but my overall, this is a huge... You know, everything about it screams prestige. Hanks, Streep, Spielberg, everything about it. Does it live up to that billing? Does it live up to all of these great talents? Was it as good as you kind of thought and expected it to be, Steph?
I thought it was better than I expected.
Really?
Because it's got the Spielberg emotional undertones, and even just the music that he chooses.
John Williams.
Of course, so he's a long-time collaborator.
Legend.
I can watch anything with Meryl Streep in, and every time I watch something with Meryl Streep in, I always think, how can she be even better? How could she do even better? And actually, this time for me, she has done even better, because this character that she plays, obviously a real life person, the level of emotion that she brings to this woman who doesn't. This woman is actually quite a controlled woman. She doesn't have any huge emotional outbursts. She's actually quite a quiet, unassuming woman who obviously has difficulty in this situation. But the way that she plays this character on that kind of quite calm level, but you still feel every emotion that this woman's is seeping out of her, I think it's just mastery. It's just mastery.
She's
of her
measured,
art.
Isn't she?
She just is amazing. And of course, Tom Hanks. Again, it's just another thing where you think, oh, can these actors get any better? And they really do. This, to me, is just it's about these two and their interplay with each other. And it's what fantastic roles Spielberg's given them. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I also really, from a personal point of view, love all the old printing presses and everything like that. It's just fascinating to see that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Because
so interesting.
Yeah, people forget but now because everything's done electronically by computer. And they had to literally...
The
metal,
canisters.
Yeah, it was
as
called
well.
Hot metal. Every single letter had to be set out in a bit of metal on, the, and then yeah.
To be printed. But also, first of all, they'd put all the text in like this canister, which then get vacuum down to the presses, which were underneath. And then when the presses started, the whole offices used to shake. I loved it. It was.
Would you equally emotional seepage for you, Kay? There was emotional seepage for Steph.
Yeah, emotional seepage.
I thought it was Streep and Hanks, obviously, as Steph said. Both fantastic. I was also really pleasantly surprised to see Bradley Whitford in it. Obviously,
yes.
Josh from The West Wing.
From The West Wing. Your favourite programme, 10 years after it finished.
And also, he's one of my favourite characters.
Of course.
I was over the moon. And also, Sarah Paulson, who was in The People vs.
Sarah
Paulson's
a great actress. So she's brilliant in that.
She played
Ben's
wife.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks.
And she's
wife.
In everything that Ryan Murphy makes. All of those True Life, or every series of American Horror Story. Yeah.
But... I really like...
Did you know this story? Did you know the true story of the Pentagon Papers?
No,
and the
I didn't.
Whole, so it was all new. And did it explain it? You know, did it feel...
Yeah, it did. It was really interesting. I think I didn't need to... You know the whole the paper then floating on the stock market?
Yeah.
I just think this is an extra strand that I didn't need to get bogged down by.
I see what you mean. I suppose that was the added jeopardy for her in her decision making. So I know what you mean, though. It's kind of like, if you don't really... Not saying you don't understand the stock market, but if you don't really understand what that means to a company, you're kind of like, oh, well, what? What does that mean?
Steph's accusing you of not understanding the stock market.
Yeah.
How do you respond?
I do understand.
Did I start that with saying I'm not accusing you of understanding that? Do you understand the stock market?
I do understand. I understand the element of jeopardy.
Oh,
you know?
Right,
she needed to make that work. Yeah. You know, you understand that part of it, but I didn't think that was necessary to the overall story. I thought she was fantastic as this,
Streep,
as this fish out of water.
Yeah.
Female, floundering female at first in a male-dominated workplace. And then, you know, you just see this transformation, or rather like, you know, this outer layer coming off and her being this ballsy pioneer and fighter of the free press.
It's so subtle, that transformation. That's what I mean when I say she plays it all on one level. It's not as if she has a huge outburst. She doesn't really have an outburst anyway. She's just very kind of... She slowly unfurls.
She's a pro.
Yeah, she is a pro.
She's a pro.
What did you think, Boyd?
I'm going to shock you.
Oh, my God. Did you not like it?
I was disappointed.
Really?
Yeah. I'm a huge... There is no bigger... As Donald Trump would say, there's no greatest fan of Steven Spielberg that's ever lived. You know, he says there's everything that ever lived.
Yeah.
I'm the fittest president that's ever lived. There's no greater fan of Steven Spielberg than me. I love him. I love his almost all of his films. There's no greater fan of Streep. I mean, love Streep. Hanks, all of these things. You know, my problem with it is I feel that partly... the issue you mentioned about the IPO, as it's known, the stock market thing. It's like, I don't care. And they did play that up way too much.
But that is fact.
I know
that's
what
happened. Well,
here's the problem. Here's the problem with the whole film, really, is that the story of the Pentagon Papers is so bound up in that, in the fact that they were trying to put the paper on the stock market and keep these millionaire investors happy, that I don't feel it's intrinsically as dramatic a story as, for example, Spotlight, which won the Best Picture a few years ago, and which for me is a far superior film. Spotlight, about how the Boston newspaper exposed abuse among Catholic priests, that is a relentlessly riveting film.
That's
right?
About
from
the Boston
start
Globe,
to finish,
about
the Boston Globe.
It.
And that is an object lesson how to... Because that story is so important. Every step of the way, you're never thinking, why should I care about that? In this, for me, the first two-thirds of this film are essentially setting up this problem. How do we get over the floating of the bloody paper on the subway? I'm like, I don't give a shit. And I don't, and I think there's no way around it. I just think intrinsically the story is not, doesn't feel important enough until you get to the end. Now, it's all set up. So the ending is brilliant. The last, like, half an hour, I thought was great. But you have to endure an hour and a half.
Do you know what? That's exactly, I thought the last 20 minutes was brilliant.
It's fantastic. And I feel like the whole film is almost like the script and writer and why Steven Spielberg, why everyone decides to do it is because they knew the payoff is fantastic. But to get to the payoff, I don't feel they managed to turn it into as good a film as it needs to be.
If you can step back from that a minute, did you not enjoy... Say this wasn't true. Did you not enjoy... No, did you not enjoy specifically the development of Meryl Streep as a character? Because obviously she's a real person.
Totally.
I mean, that's what I enjoyed. I
enjoyed it all the way through.
Mean.
I enjoyed it. I'm just saying... It's not, like, for example... It's
you didn't
not,
think this needed to be told? Is that what you're saying?
I think it was... I'm happy for it to be told, but it's not... It's not gonna. It's not as great a film. It's not a great film. It's a perfectly good film, and that's what I'm saying.
It's not.
It's
like,
not worthy of winning. For example, like, I think it's no accident that it's total Oscar bait. But it's actually, I don't think it's going to win any. Many.
Yeah.
May not be, even be nominated for Best Picture in the end. Didn't get any BAFTA nominations. I think it's like. So it's just slightly disappointing. Like
it's not the triumph of a paper being able to survive because of them being ballsy enough to. Is not the same as unearthing 90 Catholic priests abusing children in the Boston area alone, and then going on to unearth that nationwide.
Yeah.
That is absolutely
the
correct.
Other film it brings to mind is All the President's Men, which is one of the greatest films of all time, about Watergate. So this film, actually, I'm not even going to say it. It ends with an allusion.
It does.
It
does.
And it's even worse because you think, oh, hold on, you're now comparing yourself to one of the greatest films of all time.
It's
All
nowhere
President's
near
Men.
The All the President's
So
Men.
It's nowhere. No.
That's
so that's what. So I was hoping against hope that it would be of that level, but it's just not.
I didn't go. Do you know what? I think I enjoyed it so much more because I didn't go in for that.
It's all about expectations.
I went into it thinking, oh, I'm going to see a great performance from Meryl Streep, Tom Hanks, and I think for me. They excelled themselves and I loved it. I really loved it. But I take exactly what you say. I don't think it is a particularly important story that needs to be told. And we're kind of in the time where people are making important stories that need to be told.
Right.
This needs to be told.
Well, do you know what? I disagree. I think it is an important story that needs to be told because it's obviously set in 71, but actually it could be 2017 with Trump and how he's, you know, the... thing. So I actually think it is important.
Oh,
I just think
there are definitely parallels, and clearly, again, that's another reason why they made it, because there are parallels to Trump, definitely, and how journalists are dealing with that, and how far you go and all the free press and all that, definitely. And Spielberg was on Newsnight the other night talking about those parallels. But all I'm saying is I definitely would recommend it. It's a perfectly good film. It's definitely worth seeing. I just feel like with these greats involved, it's didn't quite hit the heights that it could have. I prefer Bridge of Spies, like Spielberg's last film, which was that it's another true
film.
Story.
Yeah.
You know, which that film, I thought he told that with a relentless focus. And that also with Tom Hanks. Mm. I preferred that. That felt more like weightier, kind of more stylish. Everything about that felt slightly better than this.
No, I thought this was star. I liked it. I actually liked
it. I'm sounding more harsh than I intend.
I don't think you do mean it.
Disappointment.
I don't think you sound harsh.
Good.
I think it's a film that's worth seeing. However, I personally don't think people need to go to the cinema to see it. I think you can watch it on
it's
DVD.
Not a cinema film. I agree. I don't think you need
which,
to go
but
to
for
it
Steven
cinema.
Spielberg, that's pretty much saying something because he's one of the great visual stylists ever in the history of film.
Well, so he's let himself down a little bit then because I don't think you need to see it.
I agree
this
with
film.
You. Yeah. And I think it's slightly because All the President's Men looks incredible. It's another another thing about that film to keep going on about it, harp on about it. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Well,
it's definitely worth seeing.
Oh, I am a little shocked.
I knew I'd shock you. The Post, how many stars are you giving it, Kay?
Give it 4 stars.
Steph?
I would give it 4.5 stars.
Okay.
Very
I'd give it 4. Solid 4.
Okay.
It's out in cinemas. Decide for yourself, as I keep saying. This
and tweet
Friday.
Us and let us know what you
of
think.
Of course, tweet us and let us know. This Friday, the 19th of January, as is our final big review of the week, the latest from Pixar, Coco.
Now we're talking.
Steph, we've already alluded to the fact that you're an emotional wreck after seeing this film.
I'm going to try. I'll try.
So I'm now going to give you the honour of describing what the hell Coco is all about.
Of course, she's got her head in her hands already.
Honestly, it's so upsetting. Okay, right. So I'm okay. Little Miguel is a 12-year-old boy, animated boy, of course, not a real boy. But I'm sure there are little Miguels out there. Okay.
Oh, it's not a documentary.
He loves music. He wants to play the guitar and sing, but He's been banned by his family from doing it. They don't want anything to do with
it. In Mexico.
In Mexico, yeah. This is all set in Mexico. His family, there's a bit of a curse. And they're like, you're not allowed to play music. We don't want it. And it's all to do with the fact that his grandmother, Coco, her father, so his great-great-grandfather, has passed on, okay? And they don't want it to be spoken about. And so they don't acknowledge him at all, and they don't put up his picture on the special like Day of the Dead, which they have in Mexico. They don't celebrate him at all, and they don't want to hear any music, okay?
Why is that? They're really anti-music.
So he somehow, in the magical land of animation, ends up in the land of the dead, and he has to try and get back to the land of the living, but also alongside, he's trying to discover why his family were cursed, what it's all about. And sorry, the central crux as well is he's got this Mexican music star, De La Cruz, who he is obsessed with. Mm. And so who has also passed on. So when he goes to Land of the Dead, he seeks him out.
Because he thinks that the De La Cruz is his great-grandfather.
He thinks that he's related to him. No, spoiler alert. No spoiler. I'm not going to spoil
no,
it.
No, don't spoil it.
I'm not going to spoil it. So anyway.
Voiced by Benjamin Bratt.
Voiced, and he sings in it as well. He sings does. It. It's so emotional. You're going to have to prepare yourself that you will need to take a full box of Kleenex because it is so distressing.
I've got a picture of Steph post-screening crying. And Pogs, if you want to see it, all I need to do is get one single tweet and I'm going to put it out there.
It was uncontrollable sobbing.
Oh my God, it was
whilst
awful.
Talking about it. It was very upsetting.
She was beside herself.
We should also say that it's a kind of Mexican culture celebration, isn't it, a lot of this? This is, you know, I would say probably one of the criticisms of Pixar films is they've been pretty white down the years. I mean, they've been extraordinary, a lot of them, some not so good. The last one was Cars 3, which is a load of old
rubbish
nonsense. Mm. Just purely made so they could get more car merchandise sold, which is fine. This is a complete original, and it's totally steeped in Mexican culture. So the Day of the Dead. And
I thought it was fantastically done.
There's the character voiced by Gael García Bernal, who's like the kind of sidekick figure. There's the dog. You must have loved the dog, the goofy dog.
I didn't want to mention it again because I thought, did dog overload? But the dog is amazing in it.
Yeah.
it's so brilliant. It's just lovely.
And it's kind of like it's a kind of celebration of that of the culture, isn't it? The music and. I mean, I don't know what you thought, Kay, but I thought, because I was slightly, not dreading is the wrong word, I went to a Disney event where they kind of preview all of their big films that are coming out. This is probably like 6 months ago. And they had a big spiel about it and they showed you kind of clips of it. And I thought the dog stuff looked a bit irritating. I'm not saying it was in the finished. No. I didn't think it was irritating at all. I thought Gael García Bernal's character sounded a bit irritating. But then you see the final thing. Now, this is my initial. I was slightly... spreading. That's all. I'm just being honest. Then I sat down to watch it, and I thought, actually, this is a total massive return to form for Pixar because it's. I think it may be the most stunning looking one they've ever done.
Oh, it's so the colours.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
they said the neon
colours, particularly when in the afterlife bit,
the Land of the Dead.
The Land of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, the Land of the Dead is fantastic.
Just extraordinary.
Yeah.
And it really does. And I think my one criticism of some Pixar films, even some of the, like Up, for example, which has that incredible opening 10 minutes, right? Remember?
Up is one of my favourite films.
But don't you think in the middle of Up, it slightly sags? There's a big, there's a sag in Up. Up goes down.
A sag.
A narrative sag along
which
the way.
Which bit will you think is a sag?
When they arrive, you know, the main characters, and they're trying to work. It's not quite as exciting as it should be. I think in this... there's a tiny little mini sag, but it pretty much keeps the pace going very, very well. It's funny and it's incredibly charming. And in the end, I mean, I was welling up. I wasn't sobbing uncontrollably like you were.
I have full breakdown.
But it is very, very emotional. It's brilliantly done. So I thought it was such a return to form.
Did I say that the grandmother is called Coco? Did I say that?
Yeah. And the grandma character, who looks almost a little bit like the Ed Asner Up grandfather, doesn't she, in a way? And it is such huge eyes. And brilliantly realised, and it's all done absolutely fantastically well. Are you a Pixar fan? Can you do you watch all of the films?
I don't watch a lot of animated films, so when I say that this is my favourite animated film of recent times, probably means very little. But I just thought it was so joyful.
Have you seen Up?
And no, I haven't seen Up.
Right. Okay.
I've got to get down with up. I get it. It's so joyful and celebratory. And I thought all the characters were great. I cared about all of them. And I thought, actually, you know what? For kids, this is a really nice message that, you know, when someone passes away, they still live on. And that you should always remember them.
They're at a perpetual party.
Yeah, exactly. You should always remember them. I did what, in the same breath, which seems contradictory, I did wonder if little kids would be scared of, like, the Land of the Dead.
I thought they did that really well because even so, there are skeletons. There's kind of skeletons, but they're done so comically, aren't they?
That it's so funny.
Yeah, it's really funny.
That's the thing. There's this character called Hector, who's my favourite character, who's just so hilarious. So it's obviously joyful for both children and adults alike.
I also thought I really liked the music. I thought the music was fantastic.
Remember Me?
Yeah.
Oh. You gonna sing it?
Oh, no, God, don't. You'll set her off again, Boydo.
That's the best song. I mean, there's a few. There's a smattering of songs.
No, but I mean, it's like the music throughout. The whole music throughout is really good.
There's a few songs, and the music is great.
I thought it was a nice representation of Mexican culture as well. I don't know. Like, have you seen that? Has anyone been?
Oh yeah,
about it?
I think it's done. No. It's done it very well. I think everyone involved. I think all of the they emphasised very much at that event I went to, as I say, that everyone involved, the writers and the
Mexican.
The performers. Are Hispanic. The whole thing is proper. The whole creation of it was steeped in that culture. So, yeah, they've got it right. It's all absolutely.
Because it could easily have gone the other way. Stereotypical.
But it also doesn't feel like they're doing it as a token thing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like they've gone, let's make one for the Mexicans.
No.
Do you know what I mean? It does.
No.
But you know, I know how to say that in a really flippant way. But, you know, it doesn't feel
like. It could have gone, it could have felt cheesy.
You know, it could have.
But that's the brilliant thing. At its best, this is why I think the genius of Pixar at its best is it's slick. It's incredibly slick. And sometimes, if I was being ultra critical, like this, sometimes the jokes are so like well honed, finely honed. It's almost like you're feeling it's too slick. But I don't think this was. I think in the past, some of them, you know, some like Toy Story. I mean, I love the Toy Story trilogy, but what I'm saying is, I think this is. There's almost ramshackle element to it within the slickness. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to describe. I thought it was.
It's kept to like kind of that animated caper feeling, think, all the way throughout, which is really, really good. And it doesn't feel as I don't want to say regimented, but I feel like with like Toy Story in particular, you know there's going to...
Formulaic,
right. That's it.
It's quite complicated, that's what it is. Like, because they have to explain the rules of the different world, don't they? And they have to explain like why... So in order to stay, you know, alive in the world of the dead, you have to have people looking at your picture, photos in the in the living. There's a lot of kind of little things they have to explain.
I thought that...
So they do it...
That is educational as well.
Right, yeah. I mean, these aren't all happening in real life.
Even like the great-great-grandmother, you know, stuff like this. But, God, I think it's an absolute treat. I'm going to watch it again.
Yeah, it is an absolute treat.
Oh, don't put yourself through it.
I am.
So
I didn't find it as traumatic as you
did.
Please
watch Up, because that is also emotionally
okay, so
draining.
Shall I watch... Oh, draining.
Watch Up.
Yeah.
Watch. I mean, how many Pixar films have you seen?
I'm a massive animated film.
So we've both seen all of them.
I've seen all of them. Yeah.
Where would you rank it in the Pixar list?
Oh, that's really hard. I probably would say it is in the top five, actually. Just in terms of maybe five.
Ones?
Maybe at the
it's
bottom
a bubble
of my
under,
top five.
Yeah. I think for me, it's probably just bubbling.
What are your top five?
Off the top of my head, I'm saying Toy Story 2 or
Toy Story
something.
2 is better
it's
than
better,
one.
Isn't it, than
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wall-E.
Yeah, I haven't seen Wall-E.
Which is John's favourite. Up, despite the sag, maybe.
I would say Up was probably my number two. I loved, really loved
You know what I love is The Incredibles.
Incredibles
is back,
great, yeah.
Sequel this year, I think, soon. I think it'd be
Inside Out.
Oh, Inside Out, of course. Genius, yeah. There's another sag in Inside Out, I think, though, because when they explain the premise, it's so clever. Inside Out is the one with all the emotions, the different thoughts in the little girl's head. All right, you've got to see that one as well.
Can I just
say there's a little sag in that as well. In fact, that's a good example of
sag. Do you know what I would say my number one is,
though? You're obsessed with sag.
Right, yeah. Monsters, Inc.
Oh, yeah, Monsters, Inc.
Come on, Monsters, Inc.
Wouldn't be in my top five.
That Monsters, Inc.
This is higher than Monsters, Inc.
Shall we have a screening of all the Pixar films together in our gym jams?
Are you immediately not so interested in this ranking of Pixar films?
No, I'm saying this for real. That is, look, you know that.
We should do an animated special. Let's do an animated podcast special.
I'm having a sag now.
It's the SAG Awards.
It is.
I think we've made it quite clear that it's, if not in the top five, bubbling under.
This is effing brilliant. I'm giving it five stars.
that's definitely a move
that
on.
That is a wrap-up.
That's a move on. Yeah, that's
Steph,
a
wrap-up.
Oh, five stars.
It's a unanimous.
Well, I love it.
Anytime a drawing verdict. Can make you weep from your eyes uncontrollably, it's got to be five
And remember,
stars.
Pogs, if you want to see this picture of Steph weeping, just tweet me and I will put it out there.
And by the way, I do think it probably will win the Oscar for best.
Of course.
Yeah, rightfully so.
Of course it will. Yeah.
So it opens on Friday as well as The Post. That's the one, though. I think, in a way, for me, like, I wasn't expecting to have enjoyed Coco more than The Post.
Yes,
I have to say that.
Exactly.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, you. Oh. No,
I don't
think
hate
you
The
can
Post.
Compare them.
Well, they're both films.
Oh.
Bravo. Okay.
Well, we've done the meat, and now it's
now
that
for the
time.
Bread.
It's question time.
So the question this week is, what is the best animated thing ever in honour of Coco? I could have done what's the best Pixar film, but now we've found out that Kay's only ever seen one. I'm glad I didn't
no,
choose that.
No, I've seen Toy Story.
Okay. Shall I start with you, Steph? What is your favourite animated thing ever?
I have to go on the thing that I watched continuously. So I watched so much that my videotape stopped working.
Wow.
Which is The Little Mermaid. I absolutely love.
Oh, my God,
Disney's
it's been a mermaid-themed podcast.
I can recite every single word of The Little Mermaid, and I cannot watch it anymore.
Okay, start, go.
No, I cannot watch it anymore because I watched much. I love
Steph, do the first line of The Little Mermaid, otherwise we're going to think that you're telling a lie.
Ariel. Like, Ariel. That is the first line.
No, go on. That's one word.
But I can't.
This is Dr. Foster all over again, where she said she watched the first series.
I loved it. For that Christmas, I got the videotape of The Little Mermaid and the videotape of Fantasia. And I watched Fantasia once and didn't like it. But yeah, The Little Mermaid, I love. I also do have to say, though, I really do love Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Beauty and the Beast was good.
Because when that ballroom scene happened in Beauty and the Beast, it was a really revolutionary in animation. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was like a massive thing. Yeah. And obviously Angela Lansbury's in it. But yeah.
Lansbo.
Kay, what is your favourite animated thing of all time?
Making the noise.
Lion King.
What was that?
It's the Lion King.
I don't think anyone could have decided.
Do
it.
Do the Lion King.
Why didn't you just say Hakuna Matata?
Yeah, no, because I wanted to do that bit. It's because I'm lifting Simba up. I mean, no one can see me listening. But you can see me. You've got eyes.
Well, I mean, it is the circle of life.
Stop, stop it. I'm going to stop doing it. Fine. God, none of you got vision in here. I was doing The Lion King. The Lion King is the one that I used to watch obsessively as a kid.
And it's still, and you carry on watching it?
No, I've got other things to watch. Like, I've just signed up to Netflix. God, what do you mean just watch The Lion King on a loop?
Next week, I want you to tell me what you've watched on Netflix. Because I don't believe your commitment to Netflix is happening.
All right. I will only watch something on Netflix if you do that bit from The Lion King just now. Do it.
Arapa.
Wow.
It's not the right line. Wow. I don't know what the words are. It's like that noise.
Listen.
Boyd, do it.
Boyd, what is your favourite?
I was going to sing Circle of Life, but I thought... don't think listeners need to hear that. My favourite animated thing is... I mean, I love Wall-E.
Do you know what else I love? Iron Giant. Do you like Iron Giant?
Love Iron Giant.
You only have one choice.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I'm going for Spirited Away.
Oh, I can't believe I didn't mention that.
Hayao Miyazaki.
Spirited Away.
I've seen it.
Oh. Yeah.
That was the first ever film I was allowed to go and review for Heat Magazine.
Was it?
Sent by Charles Gann.
Oh, did you resent that?
Yeah, I was like, what? You sent me to see a Japanese film? No.
It's incredible. Isn't
yeah,
it?
No, it's really good. I'm just surprised that's the one out of the myriad.
I mean, I could have chosen Howl's Moving Castle, which I love as well.
Oh, that's great.
Sometimes I like that more. But I feel like, because Spirited Away was the kind of, that was the one that turned the Miyazaki studio, Ghibli studio, into a phenomenon, I think.
Love that film.
It's absolutely incredible, yeah. And Howl's Moving Castle is brilliant as well. This year, Your Name, this year, which was a Japanese animated film, is astonishingly good film as well. So there have been a lot of really great, and Red Turtle is another brilliant film. So there's a lot of, but Spirited Away for me set a high bar.
Do you like Finding Nemo?
I do like Finding Nemo, yeah.
Sorry, in stark contrast, I was just wondering to myself.
No, I did like Finding Nemo.
I really like that.
Yeah, it was good. I love Albert Brooks, of course, who voiced Nemo. In fact, is it Nemo?
Nemo's dad.
Nemo's dad.
Nemo's
great,
but it's got no vocal moment.
Albert Brooks is a legend.
Like
but I really liked Finding Dory as well. I thought that was really good.
I've seen Nemo.
You need
Dory.
To watch Up. It's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's every animated film that's ever been made.
Yeah. Thank you very much for a full and frank discussion of the week's highlights.
You're welcome, Boydo.
We'll be back next week with more. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a bye from me.
And goodbye from me.